Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, Uppers, before we dive into the episode or the therapy session that is to come, it's back. The Hobbit Hotline is back. Friends, later tonight we'll be having our first run of our live call-in show, and you can call us at 614-569-3434. We will be doing these in the future, here and there, on a Monday, so be on the lookout for the Hobbit Hotline. Hello, friends, and welcome to an unexpected podcast. I'm Ez.
And I'm Lane.
No, I'm just kidding. Lane is not here. Friends, I had to kick him off the show, all right? after the last episode, I had to say bye-bye. No, I'm just kidding. He's going to hear this later. This is going to be a totally different episode. This is going to be something you've never heard before. I don't know if I'm going to edit any of this. There might be long pauses. It might not be great podcasting, but Don't really care. You can skip it. You don't have to listen to it. But Ez just wants to address a few things. So after last episode, I'm sitting here all alone. The missus, she's across the Atlantic, back in her home country. Bless her. Hope she's doing well. Love you, baby. And I'm sitting here pondering things. I'm watching YouTube videos. I'm reading articles. Doing different stuff. I got the first episode there, you know, season two, Rings of Power, 1 through 3 episodes up, all right? And Lane and I, it was late, 1 o'clock in the morning, we're going through it. You guys are probably sitting there going, Ez is going to change his mind. Ez is coming back, baby. Les Shill City is here, and it's here to stay. And that's not necessarily the case, all right? It's just going to be me going through, I think, a little therapy session here in terms of what I'm feeling about Rings of Power. I listed in the previous episode a lot of problems, things that I had issues with, and I'm going to go over them real quick here just with you guys. Just I want to put these out there. I actually found answers. So I joke a lot in that previous episode, like, man, I wish Payne and McKay would just show up and say, hey, Ez, look, here you go. We see your problems. We hear your problems. Here are the answers. And they actually did this about a year ago, okay? So the answers are all out there. I've got my sources listed here. Let's see where they're at. The Nerdist, The Ringer Podcast, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter Interviews, Forbes, and the list goes on. It goes on and on and on and on. Tons of people have covered this. I just didn't have the headspace, the heart. I don't know what it was. I just felt off towards the end of season one, I think. It hit Lane first, right? I think he also has... guys, Lane actually has a deep understanding of the lore, all right? He pretends like he doesn't, but this guy actually knows what's going on. And I'll also say this, too. He is faithfully adapting Tolkien's work. He's actually doing the thing that he... You know, when we kind of look at Rings of Power and we talk about, like, oh, man, you know, we have some ideas, and why did they do this? Why did they do that? He's literally using the work, and he's going and doing something that nobody has ever done in terms of concerning hobbits. So I've read the scripts. They're amazing. And even in texting him today, I mean, he's got so many cool little nuggets in there that I was just blown away. Things that, like, the Rings of Power is not including. And I'm like, oh, is this item there? Or can you believe they didn't include that? And he's like, yeah, it's actually in my, you know, it's actually in the scripts, right? He's actually got that planned out in concerning hobbits. So, Lane, love you, buddy. And yeah. All right. Don't know if you're... I love you, okay? Don't know where I'm going with this episode yet. okay. So, got the sources here, and they're kind of just breaking down. They're answering some of the questions that I had. Not all of them, and not maybe all in the right way, and it's also created follow-up questions for me. So, let me recap just some of my issues that I had with Season 1 and that kind of persist and continue here in Season 1. One of them, number one, was the guessing game in season two, and why the guessing game in season one, and then the follow-up, why the guessing game, you know, continues here with the wizard, and now why Tom Bombadil. So in large part there, the guessing game that was season two. So that was one of the problems. We got a lot of answers for that. I'll come back to that here in a second. By the way, stick around. At the end of this, I do have a theory. Don't let me forget. I don't know who's going to remind me, but don't let me forget that I have a theory about blue wizards and white wizards and no wizards in season two here. Okay? So number two here was the creation of Mordor. And I thought it was odd. I had never really looked into how it was created because I just assumed it was always there. And it was just a place of evil and it was made worse by Sauron. So that was one of my issues, and they've got some answers for that. All right, scrolling down here. Number three, creating the rings of power out of order. Okay, that's one of my issues, and I didn't even know why. I just felt like I was just kind of dumbfounded, I think, at the end of season one, and there are some answers. They're not great, but it's actually kind of hard to find some of this stuff, you know, the specific questions. I mentioned in the last episode that I had an issue with some of the Mithril and some of the way that it was incorporated into the rings and how it's going to save Khazad Dûm, all that good stuff, so go over that in a second. And then I also had sort of a little bit of an issue with, like, a sympathetic Sauron, and what does that mean? I don't know if we'll see how this goes. I'm not sure if I'll get into that in depth or not. But and then just more of this kind of characters not fitting into the third age and whatnot. So let me scroll back up to the top here. Here's the thing, guys. I think what is really throwing me, and I think it's thrown me from the beginning, but I just sort of like coped with it, and I just kept watching and said, okay, let's go. What do you guys got, baby? Come on. Is the condensed or the compressed timeline. It is a terrible idea. And I searched around, and this is something, this is from Vanity Fair. This is their explanation for why they did not do a more accurate timeline and some time jumps and different things, and why they went with the compressed timeline. So in Vanity Fair, Payne and McKay have compressed events into a single point in time. It's their biggest deviation from the text, and they know it's a big swing. Here's the quote. Quote, we talked with the Tolkien estate, says Payne, and if you're true to the exact letter of the law, you're going to be telling a story in which your human characters are dying off every season because you're jumping 200 years in time, and then you're not meeting really big, important canon characters until season four. Look, there might be some fans who want us to do a documentary of Middle Earth, but we're going to tell one story that unites all of these things. And so I mentioned my other concerns, right? You know, Mordor being created, the guessing game, and so on. But going back to this, I guess at the core of all of that, I was like, when I was saying last episode that, man, if this would have just been more straight or straightened out, and I'm thinking, and I keep, every time I do that, I'm like motioning forward, I'm thinking of a timeline, and I'm thinking like just a straight shot, like guide me through the second age sort of thing. This is kind of what I wanted. To be honest with you, this is what I thought we would get, because it is sort of what's there. It's what we're able to kind of consume and read about, and yeah, and there's creative ways to do it. So their point was that we're going to have, we'll be jumping 200 years, what, every season or every episode or whatever, and then we're not going to meet really big, important canon characters until season four. So what? We're going to meet really big, awesome, important characters in season one that are not mortal, that actually can live and stretch us the entire five seasons. And, you know, the other thing is that this comes down to their decision, right? They chose to tackle all of this in five seasons. They chose to tell all of pretty much the second age in five seasons. And then they chose, it was their choice, to not have time jumps. They chose to compress all of that into one story. And they did not have to. They did not even have to tackle all of this story. They actually could have just started with the Rings of Power and kept it really right there with the elves. You never had to include new. If you don't want to, there are creative ways to do it. And I think we've mentioned Tolkien Untangled probably 100 times. I think he owes us a buck or two. Just kidding. He's actually a great YouTuber. And again, I'm gonna put all of his. I've linked out in the description here his five season outline down in the description, because I just re-listened to it today, and It's amazing. He only uses a few controlled time jumps, and he stays very focused, and he uses characters and settings to effectively show the passing of time, which I think is really impressive. So he like communicates the passing of time through some very cool characters, and I highly encourage you guys to go check that out. So for me, though, you could have just done Rings of Power, right? You actually could have just shown used your elven characters, and you could have just shown the deception of Annatar. You could have just done that. I mean, it was a choice to do it all, right? It was a choice to say, we're going to tell one big, ambitious story where we're going to create the rings, we're going to corrupt everybody, we're going to hide them, we're going to grow these Numenoreans, we're going to fall of Numenor, and then we're going to lead all this to the Last Alliance and whatever. You know, like, they're doing it all. And they're doing it all in five seasons, and they're compressing it all into one story. You actually didn't have to. You could have spent five seasons. You could have spent four or three seasons just on the Rings of Power. And your main character could have been Celebrimbor. It actually could have just been him. And it could have been Galadriel there with Gil-galad and Elrond and Annatar, and that's it. You could have done that. And you could have sold that as the three seasons of the Rings of Power, right? And then Amazon still has the rights. Then you go tell another two season story about whatever else you want to tell. And these stories kind of connect, right? And they build and swing into each other. And if you want to keep the same actors and everything, and you get them all signed up, there's ways to do it. And actually, again, going back to the guy we've been referencing, it's doable. It's actually doable in a way that's really cool. In your core 4 to 8 characters, they can stick around the whole time. And then yes, in season 4 or in season 3, you do bring in some big heavy hitters, right? And you can actually just divide this in a way that's really cool. So I'm not going to go into all of that. There is a way to kind of, maybe Lane and I one day could talk about it on Patreon. But again, I just put the links down there for you. We found a guy who literally, I've never seen anything like this. And I'm every single comment on those videos is just like, why was this not the idea? Why did this ever come up? Was one of the things I kind of want to know. Anyway, this is supposed to be a more positive podcast. I actually texted Lane, and I before I started this whole thing, I was like, I'm going to be more positive. I'm going to address my concerns, have my therapy session, and I'm going to move the heck on. But I've yet to been able to do that. So whatever, here we go. Let me go over a couple things real quick just about the showrunners and some stuff that was said here, just in general about the show. So Hollywood Reporter behind the scenes interview, quote, some of what's been hardest to hear is the cynical point of view that is the cash grab. McKay says it's like, oh God, the opposite. This is the most earnest production. This is not a paycheck job for anybody. This is a labor of love, excuse me. And I know Lane and I joke sometimes, and I don't care if people make their money. I want people to make their money. I want to give you my money so that I can go watch something. And I'm not accusing them of any of that. Neither, I don't think Lane has either. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I blank out on the podcast. So maybe he did. I'm just kidding, Lane. I don't know. So I'm not, you know, after these guys for that or whatever. I think they're writers. I think they are Tolkien fans. And I think they are trying to do something extremely ambitious and I don't know. But yeah, just wanted to point that out there. We're not saying that, and we have no problems with you guys going out and just, you know, I want you guys to earn big dollars. I wanted you to earn big dollars and give us this sort of more, I guess, as I keep saying, sort of, I'll put it like this, a story with time jumps. There you go. I just want the time jumps. I actually want to see it all, or I want to see, you know, like I said earlier, just three seasons of, like, the rings being created with Celebrimbor being awesome. Anyway, one of the big things that we learned, even when it's a small scene at all. Okay, sorry, this is just random stuff. Let me skip down here. All right, there are things that didn't work out as well in season one that might have worked in a smaller show. McKay says it has to be about good and evil and the fate of the world, or it doesn't have that epic feeling you want when you're in Tolkien. All right. And it does. I mean, season one does have all of the, I think it does have sort of this good versus evil. It is sort of this growing thing. It just feels kind of, I don't know. It's all one big setup. It was hard to, I think what they're saying here is we're going to get into season two and it's going to be more obvious that it's good versus evil. and versus it wasn't. I mean, just to be honest, in season one, like there's elements of it, but it's largely a who's who and get to know these characters and connect, and it's about the setup. This I thought was interesting. They said that Jeff Bezos actually hung out on the set one day, and that he publicly somewhere. I missed. This is all stuff that Ez missed. I'm gonna get to my questions in a second here, where I have my concerns, and they address them specifically. This is general stuff, but they said that Payne and McKay ignored some of his ideas, or that he quipped that they ignored some of his ideas, but the writers never received notes that they were told came directly from the big boss. Still, it was always communicated to the team that this show was of the utmost importance to him, one insider says. That seems like a big... If that really happened, I think that's just wild. I think there's a lot of things that I hear about this show with the firing of certain people and the ghosting of Peter Jackson, and then just the big boss not being heard by the showrunners. That just feels strange. And it kind of adds to the strangeness of all this. So sorry, guys. Like I said, I'm gonna be stuttering, and I'm not editing a daggone thing in this. I'm not editing a daggone thing. You hear me? I'm taking I got my coffee here. It's like 11:14, so it's really late for me without Lane. Typically, it's Lane who keeps me up and going. So, Okay. So another one here. Yet Amazon has this is about the fandom. This was something that they talked about with the fandom here. So, let's see. Yet Amazon has long known they were in for a rather bumpy series takeoff. And this is, again, articles, bits and pieces, general stuff from season one that I found. They saw Tolkien fans slamming the Rings of Power online before a frame had been released. We all saw it coming. There was no surprise, she says. This is, I think, one of their producers or an executive, I believe, at Amazon. I forgot to copy over who that was. Regardless, having insight into our global audience, we also have insight into the darker sides of how people can manipulate reviews and have other points of view that we wouldn't support. And I just want to make it clear, that on this podcast, it's really coming down to lore, story. It's coming down to creative decision making, and that's some of the issues that I'm having. I'll just speak for myself here, he said his piece, and Ez really, really tries to like a thing. I feel like I, for years, I'll keep a friend around who is just an absolute jerk for years, and it's just, and Lane's like, wow, thanks, Ez. I'm just kidding. But I really just am a positive person, and I try to see the best in everyone. And I try to see the best in like my students. I try to see the best in my colleagues, my family, my friends. And just, I'm always seeking positive energy, right? I'm always wanting to put positive energy out there. So yeah, this is really just coming down to, I've had to really wrestle with this because I really was looking forward to this series and I really wanted to cover it. And I really wanted to be locked in and just, I wanted to be fanboying like crazy over it. To be honest with you guys, I wanted to go nuts, and that's so disappointing. I mean, you guys hear how I talk about, Glorfindel, for example, in the series, and you hear about how I talk about Bilbo and giving up the ring and Gandalf and all the different things. I love to gush about the Lord of the Rings. Love it. And I tell my students to this day, like, it's one of the books, The Hobbit was the book that got me to read. Those accelerated reader points, man. Like, that's what I was after. So anyway, it's so hard. This is so hard for me to kind of watch this now, and it's tough. For example, I mean, one of the things I'm not sure if I actually mentioned or not, but like with this compressed timeline, before I get into all of my other big issues here, I was texting Lane, and I said, so Galadriel is technically older than Celebrimbor, or at least close they're kind of close in age. But she's, I think technically, if I'm wrong, you guys correct me, but I think she's either close or she's technically older than Celebrimbor, and she is thousands of years older than Gil-galad. So, like, let that sink in for a second. She is thousands of years older, more mature, more seasoned, more... She's gone through it. She's seen a lot more. Gil-galad was born there in the first age, yes. And then was, he kind of, it's crazy. His story is all about the second age. This is his sort of growing up. This is him kind of becoming this leader and everything. And so, and her as well too, but it's just wild. It's hard to go read some of this stuff and think about, like, yeah, where is her family? And I heard an interview where they're like, well, yeah, of course she's got like a husband and of course she's got, you know, kids and stuff. And it's just like, well, where are they? I mean, it just becomes unbelievable. It becomes difficult to believe. And so, yeah, the believability is just wild. And it feels off. You know what I'm saying? I keep getting this feeling, and I think a lot of people can't put their finger on it, but like, what is it that's feeling off? And it seems to be just that this is all compressed into boom right here. And you know, there were moments where, like, when Gandalf goes away and tells Frodo to keep it secret, keep it safe, like, there's years that go by, right? And they compress that little things, but when we're talking thousands and thousands of years compressed. And so that, I think, is the thing that I forget about when I'm watching this sometimes, and I'm like, that's the thing. That is the one thing that just, I mean, from there, you cannot go back. And I did say it in season one, and I've said it, I just kind of forget, you know, from time to time. I don't live here exactly. I do live here, but I don't live here with Rings of Power, and just, I'm not going back and rewatching it as much as I wanted to, and I'm just, I don't know. So anyway, let's move on. Let me quit, just ram. Let me just, well, I'm going to continue rambling. All right. So one of my big things here, so The Flannel Wizard, my major issues with season one, they're actually answered by the showrunners themselves. So instead of having them come on the show, they did this for me like over a year ago, and I just missed it. I just did not have the time to do the research. But I think that at that time, the school year was starting up. I had some crazy, as Han Solo said, I had some old debts to pay off. So I was, you guys know, I was traveling the world, marrying Rosie, and things were crazy. So I wasn't looking into this stuff as much as I maybe should have wanted to, actually, at the time, wanted to. All right, so number one, the guessing game in season two, it continues. And I was sort of like, why was it there in season one? And then the fact that it's continuing now in season two is kind of frustrating. Was frustrating for me. So and I thought their answer was going to be something about the riddle game, you know, with that Bilbo plays, right, with Gollum, that the hobbits, you know, this game of riddles. I thought they were going to reference that at some point, maybe in their answers, that like, hey, look, you know, this is, we have this guessing game as to who's Sauron, and that there's evidence that this is Tolkien because Bilbo played, you know, I don't know, a riddle game. That's what I was thinking they were going to say. And no, not, and I thought that would be weak too, by the way. I'm not saying that would be a great answer, but I just thought, oh, that's probably something they're going to say. No, nothing like that. But also, forgot to mention the OneRing.net. They actually did pull a lot of interview quotes and clips together from the showrunners. So here we go. To answer my concern number one here, the guessing game and the issue that I have with it. So they said, from the beginning, we wanted to build a relationship between Sauron and Galadriel. Now, you might think, why am I bringing that quote up? But they wanted to build a relationship between Sauron and Galadriel. Well, Galadriel, that's what they see. That's a creative decision they wanted to make, that they wanted to do that. And that just, that doesn't really, I mean, there are little tiny things that sort of, I mean, he does go around and attempt to deceive these individuals, and that he maybe did come close to deceiving Galadriel. He does deceive Celebrimbor as Annatar. I'm talking about Annatar. And it's like, there is some evidence that he maybe had a bit of a air quote relationship, but it's really in the form of Annatar. And they didn't want to do that. So let me continue on here. So it's not a mystery, it's a character journey. This is a quote. It's not a mystery, it's a character journey. Watching fans fight each other bums me out. Sauron enjoys seeing us tear each other apart. That's J.D. Payne. And again, this is all compiled from various different interviews and things that they've done. So probably scary for them to say like they're quoted all over the place, but I mean, they're on podcasts and stuff, and we're trying to get an insight into like the decision making behind all of this. And I know there's a lot of people involved, and it's pretty wild. So to me, you can't do what they want to do if Galadriel clearly knows who Sauron is. She hates him. She wants to kill him. So you have to make it so that Galadriel does not know who Sauron is. But I mean, again, you could have done that, as I've said, with Annatar, right? You could have done that with Annatar. But they didn't want to do that. They did not want us, the experienced audience members, to know that this was Sauron. They also wanted us to experience this character and, you know, kind of get to know Sauron as a character without being jaded by his name. You know, but really get to know him. Sit in here close with Sauron and really maybe feel what it's like to be Galadriel or to be Celebrimbor, these other guys. What does it feel like to be them? But then later on, and this is where some of the confusion kind of comes in, is that they plant really obvious breadcrumbs that Halbrand is actually Sauron. And there's interviews where they're kind of like, you know, it's one of two things. Either you're an experienced or you have some background knowledge and you kind of know about Annatar, or you understand who Sauron is, and we're going to plant some pretty heavy clues that say Halbrand is Sauron, and you guys should kind of know that from jump. If you're fooled by it, then okay. Also, it's almost like they're trying to accomplish two things here, trying to accomplish too much, because if we get these really obvious clues that Halbrand is actually Sauron, then you might as well have just called him Annatar. To me, but I guess again they were hoping for reaching that other audience, or fooling people who were, you know, maybe just a fan of the Lord of the Rings series and didn't know anything about the Second Age, and they're kind of like, okay, you know, they might be suspicious. They'll get to know this character Sauron and or Halbrand, who turns out to be Sauron, and they'll have this really cool experience. So anyway, they're actually on the Ringer podcast, and I think the question came up, you know, did you feel like the story we are watching here is more of a roadmap towards a reveal that should feel inevitable, or more of a puzzle? And so the answer, and I don't have it all wrote down here, but one of the answers that kind of came up here that kind of goes on, I think it was McKay, pretty sure. So we're really not all about playing games with the audience. The answer is right there all along. And so and again, that's where I go back to those obvious clues. Their intention was to kind of plant some real obvious clues for everybody. And I just don't, I mean, again, this is all, they did Annatar here in season two, right? They're doing it. So I don't know why we just didn't do it season one, or why not we didn't just call him that, because they were deceived by that name. So anyways, so to my understanding, yeah, it's not important. It's what they're trying to say here is that it's not important what their name is. It's more important who they are. So it's more about the two characters. It's their attempt to not kind of have us as an audience be jaded to who Halbrand is. That was sort of their purpose. And I'm trying to get to, like, what is their creative decision? What is their reasoning behind what they're doing? Because that's been my biggest struggle. So again, therapy session for Ez here, all right? All right, why the Sauron guessing game? Whew, all right. This is a question. I got another article here, another quote. It would be very tempting to make the first season of this show the Sauron show, very villain-centric, McKay says. But we wanted that level of evil and complexity of evil to emerge out of a world that you're invested in, not because evil is threatening it immediately. We wanted you to fall in love again with Middle-earth. We wanted you to understand and relate to the struggles that each of these characters are having before we test them in a way they've never been tested before. Let's see. Let's go on down here. It's another Tolkien thing. Oh, here we go. So they're kind of explaining sort of this choices to the guessing game and why they didn't reveal Sauron right away. Another quote. It's another Tolkien thing where when a shadow spreads, which is part of what is happening in our show, it affects everyone's relationships, Payne says. Even Frodo and Sam, they're the best friends in all of Middle-earth, yet they started to mistrust each other because that's a manifestation of that shadow. So having an audience suspect this person or that person could be Sauron is drawing them into that thing where the shadow is overcoming all of us and making us suspicious of each other. So, and again, though, if you really wanted to do that, it's sort of like if you're going to go with the Halbrand thing, then I felt like the clues maybe should have been more subtle, you know, like some of the lines that he delivers. Because I remember, like, early on, I was just like, that's Sauron. I mean, flat out. And that's what they wanted you to kind of get right away. And so, yeah, I don't know. And so they wanted us, I guess, the audience to have this real specific sort of experience with that, and that's sort of their answer for why the Sauron guessing game. Okay, moving on here. Okay, here's another quote. Again, all of these are quotes that explain my original concern here. That would be like telling me, "Ez, this is why we did it. This is why we did the guessing game. This is why, you know, we decided to make this decision." Quote: "We were concerned about a situation where a part of the audience steeped in lore is six or seven episodes ahead of the characters. If deception is an important part of the journey, we wanted to preserve that experience for book readers too. The idea that the shadow can make many forms was part of what we were attracted to. The reference to gifts is a nod to Annatar. So there you go. But also at the end of season one, three rings have been crafted, and as you know from the song that Fiona Apple sings at the end of the season, there are still seven for the dwarves and nine for men and one for the Dark Lord. There are more gifts to come." So they were concerned about a situation where, you know, audience steeped in lore would be bored, maybe, or would be kind of, you know, so far ahead of everybody else that they got it. But I don't think that's what normally happens. I think it's sort of like you actually get a lot of people. For example, I cover the Wheel of Time series, and the books are all out. It's a 14, you know, novel journey. And that fandom and the people who create in that fandom are very protective of the new watcher, the new reader. They don't want to spoil things. It's already all out there. You can go get it. You know the spoilers, but they're very protective of it. And I feel like we, a seasoned or lore-steeped audience, we're not out there. I mean, we're going to watch our wives, like, you know, watch this show or our friends watch it, and we're going to kind of wait and just, you know, talk with them and wait until they're ready to go. We'll seek out our spoiler podcast and talk about it and whatnot. So I don't know. We wouldn't have been bored. We would have been there for it, right? And I think Lane and I talked about that in the previous episode where there was nothing boring. There's nothing boring about just telling us what's there. We want to see those characters and those events come to life, and we want to see how creative you guys can be about showing us that, right? And be as authentic as you can, and be so anyway, so then on the official Rings of Power podcast is JD Payne. Quote: "I want to talk about one more thing on this, which is to go back to your initial comment. Surprise, even though you were sus, we were really not about the big twist, the big surprise, the big shocker. That was never the goal here. I think we were much more interested in creating characters and relationships and dynamics that were engaging and hopefully emotionally rich and full of conflict and hopefully delight and warmth." Okay, episode two, the minute you see this guy and he says a thing that Galadriel later says to Frodo, you go, "I bet that's Sauron." You know what? You're going to have to, hopefully, as great and valid a viewing experience as someone who has no idea until it suddenly happens. If you suspect him all the way, that is a totally great way to watch the show, in my opinion, where you're engaging with a whole layer that maybe somebody else doesn't engage with. And so if they were okay, this is JD's answer here in talking about this idea of using Hallbrand and using a guessing game and this technique, like take away the name of Sauron and totally throw us in the dark. The way they chose to do that, like he already says right here that if you do suspect him all the way, that is a totally great way to watch the show, in my opinion. And I mean, I guess what they're saying there is they did want us to kind of go through that, all those emotions. They really wanted us to. They didn't want to give us the name Annatar. They wanted everyone to go at this and really try to figure this out and catch those clues and then wonder if they were going to double down on them, if this is really the guy or not, you know? So, anyway. Okay. Okay, this is interesting. Shout out to this guy. He has a whole article. Look him up if you want to. He's even got a YouTube page. Eric Kane. He's a Forbes author, and he says this: "I'm confused. Here, Payne is saying that even if you guess immediately that Hallbrand is Sauron, you hopefully will have, quote, as great and a valid a viewing experience as everyone else. Yet in McKay's statement, the showrunners were, quote, concerned about a situation where part of the audience steeped in lore is 6 or 7 episodes ahead of the characters. So which is it? And I think this is where Lane sometimes brings up, like, it feels like we get sometimes some contradictory answers and stuff. So anyway, that's their quotes on why The Guessing Game. That's some of the stuff, the answers that they gave to other reporters and outlets that were asking that question. So here we go. Moving on to why the wizard guessing game. This why a wizard to begin with is probably another question. But anyway, we knew that the stranger was going to have this coming of age story as he's going on his journey of self-discovery and figuring out what his powers are, how he controls them, what he's supposed to use them for, explains Payne. Quote, so we said, who would be an apt person to guide him through that process? Who's the old... And I didn't believe... I'm reading this and I'm going, man, because we haven't seen Tom Bombadil yet. We've seen him in the trailer, but we've not got yet to the episode where he actually does do exactly what I guess Payne says he's going to do here. Who's the oldest, wisest person in Middle Earth? Well, Tom Bombadil, we know, is around during the Second Age and was here before the first raindrop and the first acorn. So if anybody could guide the stranger along this journey, we thought it would be him. So really, that was opportunity meets storytelling need. And we feel like the audience are going to find it delightful. And I've also read somewhere else that there... And maybe it's in here. I can't remember what all I have. Got tons of it. Like 9 pages of this stuff. But it seems like they also reference a time where maybe Gandalf said that he walked this earth a time before or something like that. I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, it was sort of their justification for maybe like why we're sending in Gandalf. Because I was saying last episode with Lane that I did not think this wizard is Gandalf. And it totally is. The more I read and the more I read them talk about this, this is Gandalf. And my theory at the end of this podcast is going to explain, I guess, how I've shifted back to that. I really was like, I mean, because this is just what they do, right? I mean, they want to just throw every character all condensed together, all these different heavy-hitting names all together. Guys, they even went and pulled out Tom Bombadil, right? I mean, so they're pulling everything and cramming it all together here, right? Anyway, as for the stranger's identity, Payne explained, quote, the wizard doesn't know who they are. And this is something I talked with Lane 2 episodes ago, or 50 facts or whatever, 50 tidbits. The wizard doesn't know who they are. If they did, then it might feel a little cheap. It would be like we're just withholding just for the purpose of withholding. But the wizard is on a journey of self-discovery and learned a couple key things about himself at the end of season 1, learned that he's an Istar, and learned that he has a destiny in the East. So now we're on that journey of self-discovery with him, where he's learning how to control his powers. For us, it's real delicious to watch a character who could eventually become one of great power. Not yet be there and then have to figure that out. So, okay. So again, as I said, I went back and I watched all these different YouTube videos for season 1. I looked at all the different articles. Everyone was like, if you didn't think it was Hallbrand, you thought it was the stranger. You thought the stranger was Sauron. So that is a gimmick. That's what they chose to do. It's a creative choice that they made in season 1. And now they're coming out saying, you know, the wizard doesn't know who they are. If they did, then it might feel a little cheap. And again, they don't know because it's a choice, right? That's what you guys are choosing to do. You're choosing to kind of make this wizard a part of that original Sauron guessing game. So they're taking away everybody's name and allowing us to get to know those characters so we're not coming at it with a lot of judgment or, I guess, understanding of who they are. And we're just getting to see them have these conversations and interactions. And then once they drop the name on us, like, we're already kind of locked in, right? So it's interesting because, like, the whole idea here is that this is, you know, Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. And so they use that name to get us all in there. We're all showing up because it's Lord of the Rings, but the characters don't have the names that we expect them to have because they want us to get to know those characters first. But whatever. All right, so that's one of their answers there. Let's go on down here. So, though the Stranger used a line from Gandalf in The Fellowship of the Ring in Season 1, that was not necessarily meant to be a hint. Quote, despite what some folks might think, we're really not about a game. We're really not about a puzzle, McKay noted. But we don't want to take for granted where characters will end up. We want to see them grow and change along the way. And we hope that in the end, you look back and it feels inevitable. But in the moment, hopefully, yeah, I'm trying to say, but not say. And this is a quote. I mean, this is, again, from, it was either Deadline or Forbes or something, or I think it's a Hollywood Reporter. But there we go. So this is Gandalf, right? This wizard is Gandalf. And, you know, it was not necessarily meant to be a hint. So they're not trying to play this game with us, even though we're all playing it, right? We're all like, is he Gandalf? Is he Blue Wizard? Are we holding out for that or not? I mean, I am. I guess I'm just an idiot, right? As you guys know. But yeah, it's an unintended thing that's just happening. They're not trying to do it on purpose. But they are, right? I mean, what's wrong with just telling us that this is Gandalf and then letting this character grow and seeing an early Gandalf who grows into his power and understanding and learning? I mean, they could totally do that. And I feel like it's almost like they want this extra layer of intrigue by removing his name. Same thing they do with Hallbrand. So anyway, I'm just trying to break down some of their quotes here and get a better understanding of this. Payne added, we also try to make it delightful that there are several possibilities what that could end up meaning. Okay, sorry, I'm just trying to read the quotes here. Could that mean, come on now, get her together. Could that mean that the Stranger is Gandalf and that he says that, then he says that later on? It could definitely mean that. Could that mean that the Stranger is Saruman and that's something that you're going to realize that later on Saruman said that to Gandalf and then Gandalf said it? There are always ways you can pinball it from the legendarium to the story, and there could be delightful paths that could come out of either eventuality. Wow, we like to keep those doors open. So, I mean, but they know, right? Like, they are writing this character knowing that that's either Gandalf or Saruman or a blue wizard. And then, I mean, they just said that it's not about a puzzle, it's not about a game, but yet they have left that all open. It just, it's again, like Les Lane said, it sounds contradictory. It's confusing. Again, I'm a hobbit. I'm a dummy. I don't necessarily know. So, I know you're not going to tell me who the Stranger is. This is another interview, but will we find out who the Stranger is by the end of this season? And Payne said, definitely yes. Okay. So again, they are going to tell us, and this is a journey of him discovering his name. So, okay, I think we should also say that that's not why you should go on the Stranger's journey this season. We like to say that he's someone who comes to Middle-earth, he's learning his purpose, he knows he's a wizard now, but he doesn't really know what it means to be a wizard, and what does it mean to have these powers? What are my powers? How do I control my powers? What am I supposed to use them for? Who do I fight? How do I fight them? What impact is this going to have on my friends? What impact is this going to have on me? All of those questions he's asking on the journey going on as he comes into his own. So that's the ice cream sundae. The name is just the cherry on the top. So it's sort of like what they did with Hallbrand. It's like there's tons of clues that say, yes, this is Hallbrand. This is Sauron, right? Excuse me. And we're going to give that to you right at the end. All right? But we're going to tell you early on with some heavy hinting and some heavy-handed hints here that this is the person. So again, this is Gandalf. There's a bunch of heavy hinting.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Here, and you just have to kind of go along. It's just the experience they want to create. So the specifics of these things matter so much. Daniel Wayman, who plays the stranger, developed a voice with a local coach that has a little Irish, kind of like it matches the little twinge of the Irish there with the Harfoots. It has that, so it's meant to be kind of a match. Whatever name he may one day be known as is not actually important at this stage of the journey. What matters at this stage is his own relationship to power, good and evil, and darkness and light. All right, so again, that's all the quotes that I really had. There's probably more out there. I just wanted to go. I was just copying and pasting, trying to find some stuff that would help me have a conversation, if you will, with the showrunners, or at least listen in on what their idea or their thinking is behind doing the guessing game. And it's really just like they I think want you to get to know that character without having the name come right in and sort of trump everything. You know, it's sort of like, if it's Gandalf, all right, cool, we expect him to do these things and we sort of know who he is. And I feel like they think it would take something away from this journey or this relationship that we're supposed to go on if we know that character's name. But yet there's enough hints that us who do see and hear the hints right away, we're also having a slightly different experience, and it's this whole layered approach or whatever. All right, there we go. That's the answers to my questions. I still don't like it. I still think that you could have just said, you know, who they are. You could have even used a different name for Gandalf, right? Where everyone's used to hearing Gandalf, but he has other names, right? The elves call him something completely different. And I think you could have done that, right? You could have gone about it a different way. So, I mean, the whole thing is, again, going back to the time, you know, issue there, it's like that's our real issue. And the fact that you're jamming the wizard in there is okay. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Number two, the creation of Mordor. I just thought it looked odd. I had never really looked into how it was created because I just assumed it was always there. It was just a place of evil. And it was made worse by Sauron. So they actually do explain this a little bit, and there are some quotes and there's some answers to it. This is McCain. He explains the scene by saying, a huge theme in Tolkien is the environmentalism and the way that machines and industrialization destroys the land, McKay says. We wanted that to be central and core all the time. It's a thing that comes up again and again throughout the show. So in the writer's room, we ask, what if Mordor was beautiful? And what if it was sort of like this, something beautiful, like a countryside in Switzerland? And then what could happen that would transform it? We talked about the poisoning of the land, which starts in the very first episode with the cow. And then you find out about the tunnels being dug and the sulfur is going up into the air. It all builds towards this geological, realistic way of igniting the mountain, which now blacks out the sky for a very practical reason. Adar, our villain, sees the orcs as his people, and they deserve a home where the sun doesn't torment them. And we're hoping it will make it will take people by surprise. So yeah, this was a spectacle, something that they kind of wanted to pull off and go crazy with. And I did some digging because I was kind of like, yeah, okay, what is the origin of Mordor? Like what was it really, you know, like? We always associate Sauron with it, but in the Silmarillion, Tolkien details that Sauron made Mordor his home because of the volcano. He wrote that, there above the valley of Gorgoroth was built his fortress vast and strong, Barad-dûr, the Dark Tower, and there was a fiery mountain in that land of the elves named Ordruin. Indeed, for that reason, Sauron had set there his dwelling long before, for he used the fire that welled there from the heart of the earth in his sorceries and in his forging. And in the midst of the land of Mordor, he had fashioned the ruling ring. So that's something from the Silmarillion. Christopher Tolkien writes, and there's some notes here on the peoples of Middle-earth. That the name Mordor was maybe already an Elvish name for that region. Right, or a Druin, the volcano there, the eruption, which were, here we go, that the volcano itself, and that this, you know, Melkor's sort of messing with the earth, right, it's basically the result of him, right? So the first big Dark Lord, Morgoth, Melkor, is actually sort of responsible for that, and then Sauron just sort of inherits it, but he's been there for a long time. Let me see. Okay, here we go. This is the letters, Lane. This is the stuff that haven't read them all yet. All right, I got to get on it, I guess. So not only is this noted in the Peoples of Middle Earth, and the Silmarillion, but in letter 131, we have Tolkien noting that Sauron's original intentions to stay in Middle Earth were fair, and that those intentions were the reorganizing and rehabilitation of the ruin of Middle Earth. All right, let's see. Tolkien continues on in the Silmarillion of the Tales of the First Age. Sauron was a being of Valinor, perverted to the service of the enemy, and becoming his chief captain and servant, he repented in fear when the first enemy is utterly defeated, but in the end does not do as he was commanded, and he goes back, he lingers in Middle-earth, and very slowly, beginning with fair motives, and the reorganization and the rehabilitation of the ruin of Middle-earth, that's sort of what he's... It's kind of what they're trying to do with this whole idea that he's... Although they're not, really. I mean, we haven't really heard him specifically mention anything, like what he's trying to do. Other than, I guess, like when he was doing his campaigning there with the orcs at the beginning of episode one. But anyways, he neglected the gods, and he becomes a reincarnation of evil. And, so he's the Dark Lord. All right. Moving on. So this is all kind of, we have their explanation, we go back to that, which is they wanted to bring in this bit of an environmental, peace where machines and industrialization are destroying the land. So that's their sort of reason for doing it. They wanted it to be catchy and interesting. And I was wondering, how is it Tolkien? How does it relate to Tolkien? How does it relate to the lore? And I think, like, as Lane and I often talk about, Sauron does go there. He does set up his base there. He does move out of the north and come down and set up a base there, and he starts to grow his presence. And that's the place where I kind of think, and I see him as he's going to and fro. He's kind of coming and going, and he will disappear and retreat there, take a vacation, there by Mount Doom, and then he'll roll back in as Annatar and deceive folks for a couple decades, and then Celebrimbor says, hey, it's time for break. Everybody sort of breaks, and he rolls back to Mordor, continues corrupting, doing his thing. But anyway, they wanted this to happen, boom, now, and they wanted it to be this whole thing for Adar, their created character. So Adar creates it, Waldreg puts the key in there, and... I don't know. As Lane and I, we went on for a long time about how this is more about me bringing up the answers. This is more about me looking at, like, what is it that they're actually saying about my concerns? And this is what they're saying. They wondered, what if Mordor was once beautiful, and then what could actually transform it? And so they got a very scientific reason to do that. And they think that it's sort of backed up in terms of, I guess the couple points here is just that, like, when Sauron walks into Mordor, it's already there, and it's sort of what he did in either the late First Age or Second Age, early Second Age, and he just goes in because this is the place he wants to be, and he wants to use the fires there for his forging and stuff. But he had, and he technically still has no actual. He doesn't create it because, again, in the Silmarillion, it's sort of he doesn't actually create it originally, right? But his big bad boss does, and so it's weird. It's not like it's. I think it would have been cooler if it's just like always been there. It's sort of this place of evil, and there's ties back to Morgoth and stuff, and it's place where Sauron's from. It just feels weak that it's for orc babies. It's a place for orc babies to harbor and to be safe and from the sunlight. So. Let me see here. Some major questions. Okay, here we go. One of my questions was, so Morgoth doesn't create Mordor, or it was not a result of his doing. It was a direct result of Adar and his orcs wanting land to live in that was free from sunlight. But how long is that going to last? Yeah, that was my other thing. Like, what's the scientific reasoning as to why the clouds continue on? Is there a river that's continuously pouring into Mount Doom? Don't know. All right. Those are kind of follow-up questions, but I'm not going to read all this. I had a bunch more stuff here where they go back and forth on a deadline article where they talk about the scientific bit here with the eruption. We get it. Scientifically backed. So there's a reason why it happened. all good. But yeah. Okay, moving on to creating the rings of power out of order. And this first one is not exactly an answer towards, like, you know, it's not really, I guess, directly answering my concern or whatever. But I'm going to read it to you anyways. All right, so here it is. Deadline, what about the crises? Lane's probably I hope Lane is laughing at this episode. He's sort of like, this is really just going through therapy here. And he's really just, I'm just processing this. I'm processing it. I collected all of these things last night, and I looked through them, and it was too much. I had to go to bed, and I was like, I just want to kind of do this and see if anybody else is in the same place. I've actually gotten a lot of messages from folks after we did that last episode on season two, and they were like, yeah, we're with you. We are also kind of, we've been kind of quiet. We don't want to ruin anything for anybody who's really enjoying and loving it. And that's why we said at the beginning of that episode, I was intentional about if you really are a fan of Rings of Power and you don't want to kind of have a viewing where that is soiled by lore. You know, if you don't want that, then you need to just go at this and watch what Rings of Power is. You just need to go at it and have fun and take in the sets, the music, and the costuming and the story that they're presenting to you. I think for people like me and Lane and others, it's confusing. You know, Galadriel is probably the biggest confusion, and it comes down to her just being younger than everybody else when she's actually older than everybody else, and she's actually more seasoned and more, you know, whatever. But anyway, all that to say, this was my original attempt here was to go through this whole process and come out of this on the other side and go, you know what? I'm just going to watch it as purely, I'm not saying fan fiction, but they are fans, and it is a fiction, and it is also just a lot of their creation. It is just a lot of their totally made up, and there's less connections to pillars. There's really just the characters that are there, but they're all kind of, again, smashed together, as you guys know. So, all right, done with that. Moving on. So, yeah, creating the Rings of Power out of order. What about the crisis facing the elves, dwarves, and men in season two? And here we go. This is Pain. Okay, season one, the elves face this this crisis where their light is fading. And it's just sort of an obscure Tolkien idea that even though the elves are immortal, they can still fade under the weight and the weariness of immortality and the evil of the world. We wanted to figure out a way to dramatize that. And so trees are so important, and Tolkien came up with the idea of the great tree that could visually demonstrate the fading of the elves. So there's really, they're in a really terrible catch 22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. At the start of the season, they now have procured the means to halt the fading, right? So that's what we all were talking about last episode. With the three rings that build on Tolkien's mythology of the Third Age, this is a window into how we piece these things together. In the Third Age, we learn that the outcome of the War of the Ring, it was bad for the elves. Because once the ring is destroyed, it renders their realms, the power of their rings, it's also gone, right? And which means that they're going to fade and they're going to have to leave Middle-earth. So we were like, okay, if their rings have been what was keeping Middle-earth alive, what if they realized they were fading earlier on? And then the rings were a solution to that problem. That was the backward math we did from the Third Age to the Second Age. So now we are at this pivotal moment where they have the rings they know can save them, but they don't know if they can use them because, as Elrond rightly says, what if Sauron built some kind of back door into it that would allow him to have some leg up on us? This could be compromising and dangerous and reason to not use them, and we'd have to go home. We could be powering our enemy even more. So that's the crisis that the elves are facing. Sorry, it's kind of hard to read this because it's they're also just talking, and I think they're kind of summarizing some of their back and forth. But okay, so the idea there is that I don't dislike this idea. You know, I don't mind that that the rings are kind of also this way to preserve everything. and that they use them maybe for a short time to kind of, you know, heal their realms a little bit, bring some extra light, some extra oomph, some extra power back in there. But it is tough because at the time, you know, in the lore, at the time that Celebrimbor does gift out these rings, right around that, he's really doing that, I believe, and I gotta check, but like it's very close in terms of the time that they know Sauron is at work. So they have them, then they have to take them off, right? And it was really about him getting those rings away from Sauron. He sends them away. Some people will kind of argue that there's not a lot of evidence that Celebrimbor was forging the three rings at the very end. They're the last ones that are forged. That he's forging those in defiance of Sauron. I like to believe that he is. I've always just had that impression. I could just be totally wrong about that, but that's kind of how I felt about it. In terms of the stuff that I've read. And again, this, as Layton said, you read stuff and you go away from it. We all have jobs. We go work and we do our thing. So I don't have that exactly pulled up in front of me or anything, but I just had that impression. Now, I've seen in different places where they've even said that's not necessarily the case, that he was, we don't know for a fact that that's what he was doing. He did truly, once the first 16 were made, then Annatar did leave. Right, and those rings are still in Eregion, and Celebrimbor continues on and says, "You know what? Instead of 16, I'm going to go ahead and make myself three more. Think I can do this on my own." So, was he doing that necessarily in defiance of Annatar or Sauron? Not really, but at some point, it will be very important to keep them away from Sauron, and so that's why he will gift them out. Right, he will send them away. And stuff, because the siege is happening and he's having this whole and Sauron's coming back banging on the door saying, "I want my 16 rings." He's actually got three. And then once he learns about that, then Sauron's really ticked off and wants to go get those. So it's just totally different. But I don't dislike this idea that they maybe were going to be, as I mentioned earlier, with the whole bit about the creation of Mordor, you know, it's or that Sauron was interested in this idea of helping you know, it's like this flawed idea that he needs to rule Middle Earth so that way he can clean it up. All right. He's a new law dog. He's coming in. He's got to clean this whole place up and he wants improvements, and his improvements are in his mind very good and stuff. So that restoration and sort of bringing things back was something that he was interested in. There's apparently some evidence for that in terms of letters from Tolkien and different things and some notes and stuff. But the, so yeah. Okay. All that fits. That's not terrible. That's actually interesting that the rings do that. But and I think maybe you could have even still have done that even if you would have created them in order. I think there's still a way. I know it's kind of rushed there at the end because there's a lot going on in terms of, like, you know, how long Annatar had been deceiving Celebrimbor and how terrible he feels about that and whatnot. But Annatar goes away for a while. And you know, so there's room for it actually to happen and be So here's a more clear answer. So this is an interview with Inverse. Hutchinson describes what inspired the choice to stray away from Tolkien's canon. She explained how season one was so. I don't think this is one of the writers. This is one of the writers. I think at the very end. This is the finale writer. I think. She explains how season one was so focused on the journey of the elves that, symbolically, the three rings had to be forged first to display that. She goes on to say how the series needed to have rings of power in it, given the show's title, and the forging of the elven rings worked for the story, and not the established canon. So the story took precedent. And here's her quote. "So much of the season was about the elves and their journey and Galadriel's journey and the fading of Eregion. So we wanted to tie those rings to that story. It was about narrowing our focus down on them and having those rings cap off the season because we had to make rings. It felt like the climax of that arc as opposed to trying to manage the timeline in a different way." So, okay. All right. So much of that season was about, yeah, okay, got it. There we go. Yeah, got that listed there twice. Come on, Ez. All right. So my follow-up question to that is like, what does that do to Kelly Brimbor's character? Which is kind of what I was talking about. Like, how does that alter his character? And by condensing all of this, like, what does it make him look like? And that's where I think I have another podcast I want to do someday where I talk about who Kelly Brimbor was and my vision of him and how other, I think, content creators and other Tolkien fans just envision Kelly Brimbor and his works and what he did. So I think it, I don't know, I think it kind of cheapens him a little bit. I think it, as we've kind of said all last episode, Lynn and I were talking about this, I don't really like the answers here. The answers were just like, well, this, it's, again, as they sort of said, they're ignoring the lore. And that's the part of the thing was that they said, hey, we're going to lean back into that hardcore for season two. And I, as I said, it just so far seems to be that they're just picking and choosing some cool names and cool characters to kind of bring in. But again, it's already a mess. It's already irreversible kind of creative choices that they've made that we can't go back, and we have to kind of double down on it. So very, very difficult. All right, moving on here. The Mithril problem, not as concerned. You know, in the previous episode, I kind of said that I was concerned about the Mithril being, you know, a part of the rings. That's, like, the backstory, I think, is actually kind of cool and fine, and it's sort of this idea that there's this, all right, the Silmarils are actually preserving Middle-earth, and there's that connection there with, because they had to invent the backstory as to how Mithril is sort of created, and then now Mithril is really cool, and we need it in all of our rings and whatnot. I guess I just sort of wish that Celebrimbor and Narvi would have been a bit more involved in that decision or that discovery or whatever, you know, that there would have just more time with that. And it, yeah, I don't know. It just seems all kind of like the timing and the coincidence is just odd. It's, you know, like Sauron cannot control all that stuff. It's just too much. You know, when Galadriel shows up on the raft, it's just this coincidence. It's just fate pulling them together there. And then later on with the Mithril being a big find and something that they should pursue in the Khaz Ad-Dûm, and then it coming out and being the thing that can preserve these kingdoms. And so therefore we need to create something great. And just so happens that he comes along at the right time. There's in the original lore, it's so much more intentional. You know, Sauron is much more, it just feels more intentional. And in this, it just doesn't. It feels like he's kind of, he's just sort of rolling with the cards that he's dealt, you know? And he seems less in control. And it seems like he's just willy-nilly kind of calling these shots out and sowing chaos. He seems to be, like, it's a controlled chaos, but it just, you know, and it's sort of starting to work in this certain direction for him, but I don't know. It just seems less intentional. I actually have seen in the trailer where it seems like they're, and I've even heard them talk about it, that they want this to be for us to see really how conniving and how I think that intentionality is going to come back later in the season. I think, but I don't know. But the Mithril problem is one of those things I was kind of laughing at in, you know, last episode with Lane, and it's like. It's a cool, it is what it is. I mean, it's bizarre that it's the thing that's going to go back and I don't know how it's going to help Khaz Ad-Dûm, you know, when it's already there. But I guess it's the structure and it's the technique of the ring making, right? So we'll kind of let that one go for now. And see, there we go. Some therapy session. It's paying off. All right. Point number four, not bothering me nearly as much. First couple ones, maybe they are, but let number four, we'll let her go. Okay. Number five, why a sympathetic Sauron? You know, this is one of those things, too, where, I mean, I don't know. You could have still done, I just don't like it. I don't know why. I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it. I didn't really find any quotes talking about this. I mean, I kind of mentioned some earlier where there was like why the guessing game, and they wanted us to really connect to Galadriel and Sauron, and they wanted a relationship between the two of them. And the only way you can kind of do that, that's your creative choice. You want to do that. So yeah, you have to make him sympathetic. You have to make her, you know, kind of feel sorry for him. And she's like, you know, get back up, let's go. And they're trying to show this deception. They're trying to show his deceptive abilities and the way that he's able to deceive her. But I don't like it. That's all there is to it. And it's just, again, difference in opinion. I think the Annatar decision would have been better. I think they could have started off with that. I think that Heck, they could have even, you know, to show that, like, they actually could have had Annatar in his angelic form, right, over in Aurigion, and Galadriel out on the raft with Hallbrand, same actors, and all of us be going, like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Even people who are watching it new, kind of like, what? There's two people in two places? What's happening? I mean, it's, you know, that's, does he have the power to do that? I don't know. But it's just the idea. You could have done just so many different things you could have done. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah, I don't like it. All right, moving on. Number six, characters not fitting in with their third age version. This is it. I'm going to stop right here after this. So this was the quote I was trying to get to, and it was the last episode I said I was going to link a podcast where Payne and McKay were talking about this idea that the fandom was sort of like upset that, you know, Galadriel's child wasn't there and husband wasn't there and stuff. And that was the Ringer podcast. And I believe if you guys want to look that up, that should be out there. There's people who've got it timestamped. They did an interview with Payne and McKay. And but here's some of the quotes from it. So, you know, okay, let's see here. You know, Celeborn, it's like she, and again, this is them from a podcast, so it's a little bit hard to read. You know, Celeborn, it's like she's supposed to have a husband and a kid. She's supposed to be the lady in the woods. Well, of course, yes. It's been one of the most discouraging aspects of the response is that some portion of the audience we felt the show was for didn't want to go on the journey. They already want it to be what it's supposed to be. Wait. They already want it to be what it's supposed to be. That surprised us. Some portion of audience don't want to go on a journey of discovery that surprises. We thought fans would enjoy Galadriel not having a husband and a child. And that was, again, that's McKay saying we thought fans would enjoy Galadriel not having a husband and a child. No, I mean, it's so again, I did this podcast to try to find some answers to my questions, and I'm finding them, and some things I'm sort of like, okay, I'm understanding what they're wanting and what they're trying to capture, the spirit of like this go on a journey, connect to these characters, really be invested in them and everything. But then you're just, as Lane and I said in the previous episode, you're not being faithful necessarily to what's there. And I think their response is, well, it's boring. There'd be too many time jumps. We would see humans dying left and right. You know, we wanted it to be, we wanted to bring in these, I mean, really, like, they wanted to bring in these different, they wanted something spectacular to happen. And so then I feel like they're back engineering this sort of like, well, Tolkien said something about industrialization, blah, blah, blah. And so let's sort of start to incorporate that into making Mount Doom. I don't know, man. It is just really, it's so much. Because this whole story seems like it's at the end of the Second Age. It seems like we're 5 seasons or maybe 5 years away from the big battle, the Great Alliance, and our characters have 5 years to get there. So, you know, like, by the time the Third Age starts, it's like you have the Third Age starting, and then Mount Doom's only been there for 5 years. And it just is, it's not believable, and it doesn't have that weight and that lore kind of behind it and everything. You know, you can't actually have a character like Galadriel talking about her family and connections and lore and referencing things from long ago because they just wiped that clean. You know, it feels like it's just gone. So anyway, it's just difficult. What am I at here? An hour and 12? All right, gee, Merry Christmas. All right. So anyway, guys, some of my concerns, laid them out there and mentioned them last episode, and I really was trying to say, cool, I found a couple things that helped me move beyond this and just sort of say it's all good. But then I go back to the very first thing, which is the compressed timeline. Shouldn't have done it. And so from there, I have to say it's a fan fiction, and I have to go look for things that are really good about the series, and that's going to be the sets, that's going to be the music, that's going to be the acting, the line delivery. It's going to be, you know, even some of the lines, even some of the Easter eggs, cool little Easter eggs here and there and stuff. It'll be fun. They will bring those things in. But They lose believability because it's all jam packed together in such a way that is that's just hard for me to kind of swallow. And so I don't know why they didn't think that having a young Galadriel, who again is thousands and thousands of years older than Gil-galad, like why would she take orders from him like that? Like, yeah, he's still the High King and everything, and she doesn't have a claim to that. But it's like that blows me away that we went this direction. She has there's a way to create a really awesome story for her. And again, I go back to, and Lane and I wish you guys, I will one day try to paraphrase for you the Tolkien Untangled story outline. But it's really just him summarizing and showing you guys kind of like what happens in the Second Age, and then also like how you would pull that off creatively on screen. So it's not anything. I mean, it's great. Like it's a masterpiece of him like coming up with the creativity for opening scenes and stuff that are just amazing, and keeping it focused and keeping it sort of, you know, nice and condensed. Remember when we had no idea what this show was going to be, and you could guess anything, and you were thinking like, oh, it could be this, it could be that. Like, if you could go back and like, if there is a way they actually could have started the show off totally differently, and they've provided reasons. There are quotes here now, and I've just read some of them to you. Not very well. Sorry about that, guys. It's late, and I'm just sort of, again, rambling and going nuts. But there are things provided by that they say, you know, that they did talk to the Tolkien estate, and if they were to be exactly true to the letter of the law, then they're going to be telling a story where human characters are dying off every season because you're jumping 200 years in times, and then you're not meeting really big, important canon characters until season 4. Just not true. And also not a good enough reason to do what you did and to condense it the way you did. It's just not good. So I tried. I'm going to, from this episode, this is what I wanted to finish with, okay? Let's finish with this. Finish strong, guys. Give us something positive. So I am, here's the theory. Oh boy. Who was going to remind me about that? Huh? Nobody. Y'all were sitting out there thinking, as I had totally forgot. I didn't even write it down the doc here. Hold on. Let's get a little coffee. All right. So since it's a fanfic, I'm going to move on. I am going to bury this. When I bring it up from time to time, it'll just be the same thing. Should never have compressed the timeline. There's a different way to do it. There's a completely just creative differences. There were multiple pitches to the studio. Different things were pitched for the Second Age, and things like the origins of Gondor, right, were pitched, and young Aragorn, different things. Tons of things were pitched. Actually, to Amazon once they got it. So I was reading that. I have tons of articles pulled up. I mean, I have 100 tabs open on two different monitors, and my computer's actually shutting down because the daggone ads over here on freaking Deadline and Hollywood, what you call it, Reporter. So anyways, but yeah, so going forward, I will be bringing up just the fact, hey, compressed timeline, it wasn't a good idea, moving on, and I'm done. I'm kind of done. I think. We'll see. I don't know. You guys are probably laughing at me in a week. But what I wanted to bring up is my theory. So that is, let's see. This is going to be a complete contradiction of canon, but I mean, I feel like we can do it because of the show they're presenting to us. You know what I mean? Like if certain characters exist at a time where other characters don't exist, right? So you have Celebrimbor, who like creates the rings, and it's like 1,000 years later until, or more, I think, even when Isildur and everybody else sort of shows up and stuff. Like this is, it's crazy. They're not alive at the same time, and the ages and everything are all just jacked up, right? So I think we can do whatever we want right now. So the theory is this, and this is major spoilers, so anybody who has watched season 2 and episodes 1, 2, and 3, why am I saying that now? I mean, I've just went through and talked about all the whole whatever. As come on, it's getting late. Spoilers. Here we go. So the evil wizard that we see in Rune, that we see out east, is actually a blue wizard. And that blue wizard went out east, lost his way. You can do anything you want right now, guys. you might as well just go crazy with this series. That is a blue wizard. You remember how Gandalf was once gray and he became white, right? You remember that? He took on the white robes and he said, "You know, I'm back, baby." This is a blue who went out there with blue rubies. Boy, wow. That's the first real actual. Hold on, let me get another one. My first splutter I kind of had. I'm not editing a daggone thing in this thing, so sorry, guys. I know it's bad form, bad podcasting, but I just have to. This is for my own sanity and sake. I just have to do it this way, or I'll never get the episode up. So that wizard is wearing white, and they're all wearing white, and there's moths, and Gandalf was like talking to a moth, right? I mean, it looks like they're moths anyways, right? He's whispering, and, you know, quiet, go, right? He's just, boom, go. So there's that connection. That's a wizard, right? How does he know of, how does this dark wizard know about the Istar, right? How does he know more about, because he came first. The blue wizards came well before, apparently, I mean, you know, possibly. We know that actually Gandalf, Saruman, and Radagast don't come until the Third Age. Doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want in Rings of Power. So they're coming in the Second Age, right here at the very end. So, hey, not too bad. But the Blues, they've been there for a long time, all right? So we're seeing one of them. He's corrupt. He's actually ate the other Blue Wizard. And this is the White Wizard now, and they actually feuded and fought, I think. And unless there's another one that shows up later, we'll see. Maybe that's Season 4. I don't know. But I think the Blues went out there, and I think they took different colors, all right? I think that's what happened. Tom Bombadil wasn't there to explain this to them or something. I don't know. Maybe they got there and they thought, hey, we got our piece. If they decide to send any more of us, the Istari, which is weird because it always felt like that from Valinor, they sort of like maybe had like an Istari council and said, hey, look, you five, look, this is what you're doing. Other than just like, what if you're just standing there one day and they're just sort of like, boop, you're gone. Over, you'll figure it out. Go. You know, a meteor. I mean, it's crazy. I think a lot of them landed near Círdan, actually, or something. I don't know. Anyway, that's it's not much of a theory. It's more just a stab there that I think that is a white wizard. That's a dark wizard that was once a blue wizard. And it's odd that, you know, later on, you know, there was the two blues. That's all he says. Gandalf's the two blues, and I've quite forgotten their names, whatever. Well, yeah, because he kicked their butts. And he didn't know his own name back when he fought them. So how does he, you know, so there you go. That's how they're going to make that work. And that's my big prediction. I'm going to stick around and see if that dark wizard doesn't just turn out to be a blue wizard who went white, and the white is false, and it's actually, you know, you guys know what I'm saying, right? So there you go. I will be sticking around, though, just kind of figure out who the stranger is. I want to hear Gandalf or Saruman or something. It won't be any of those. It'll be the other names. But I want to hear some confirmation. So I'll be sticking around to see what's going on with that. I do want to see how they do Tom Bombadil. They've thrown enough interesting characters in there that it's kind of like if you said to me, if somewhere there are plenty of these like fan fictions written about characters whose stories stop, and you can find them all over the internet. I actually thought about pulling one up and pretending like it was, you know, I was actually trying to see if somebody else did what Tolkien Untangled did. If you guys have any fan fiction that's like really awesome and really cool and really creative, and somebody has that, like, Lynn, I'll read it on the daggone show, man. I will at this point, I want to see the different creative ideas out there. So I'm sure someone's done it, but anyway, since it is a fan fiction and it's just this thing again, a lot of this stuff, like I said, Adar is made up. It's just things are just made up, and that's fine. Things had to be made up for sure. I'm not upset about that. I like the Mithril backstory, actually. It's cool, sick, awesome. You very unique. But it's the compressed timeline. It's the fact that Galadriel's like 20, you know, seems like a teenager and is getting reprimanded by Gilgalad, and you know, he's just actually a pup. It's weird. So anyway, guys, that was my half, you know what, half attempt at a little therapy session. I did really try to find the answers to some of my questions. Maybe if you guys have other articles, things that break it down better, send it my way. You can hit me up either at Up Talking Tolkien or over at Wampret_2M. Check my DMs over there. I've been DMing quite a few people, and we're going to have the Hobbit Hotline. Oh, by the way, why did I mention that at the beginning? Daggone it. Maybe I will do a quick little thing, just a, yeah, a little announcement. But don't forget, about the if you're listening to this today, which is going to be Monday, September 2nd, later tonight, actually at 8:30 to 10:30, we will be having the Hobbit Hotline. And you guys can call in and chat with us, let us know what you're thinking. Let us know if I've lost my actual rocker in terms of, there we go. There we go. Lane's posted the poll. So the number is 614-569-3434. So that is 614-569-3434. There you guys go. You can call in, 8:30, 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. So it'll be Eastern Standard Time. And by the way, I don't know what we're going to see. It might be a little, it's a little rocky the first time that we do the Hobbit Hotline, but I will try to work through some of the kinks. I've got the number up. I've got the dongle that saved us during season one. And I don't really know how to mute some of the rings that are coming in and stuff. We might try things a little bit differently. We'll figure it out. But and also, if we have to cut you off after, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, it's just because we're trying to get a bunch of different people on. So just kind of keep that in mind. You know, we're not trying to be rude to anybody. And also, do not be afraid to call here and say, Ez, you're an absolute freaking idiot. This show's awesome. I don't know what your problem is. Because I was that guy early, like season one, I was, you guys heard me, man. I was locked in trying to find all the cool things, trying to figure out who Adar really was. What's his real name? Is he a dark elf? You know, is there connections to the First Age? Are they not telling us all the rights they have and where's this going to go? And then I just sat with it for, I just ignored all this different stuff. I said, no, don't look, just consume. Kids table, they set a cake in front of me. By God, you need to eat it. But like when you find a fork in the cake and you kind of know, you at some point you're eating it and you're like, I don't know, it seems like that. You can taste that metallic sort of something's wrong in the cake. And then you get to the actual, you know, fork or spoon that's actually been baked into the daggone cake. You're like, something's wrong. I'm bad at the analogies, but Lane's better at this stuff than I am, you guys. I don't know. It's late. All right, enough rambling. Am I going to post this? As I sit here an hour and 25 minutes later, you're like, did I just do this whole therapy session for myself, or am I actually going to post it? I don't know. I guess I'll probably post it. We'll see. So thanks again. Appreciate you guys. And as always, remember that the timeline doesn't really matter in this show, and Galadriel is technically thousands of years older than Gil-galad.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.